beloved Bab Dada has given us clarification of what tapasya is and what we are supposed to do in tapasya year. And we have been following his instructions to a great extent, to the best of our ability. But I find that there are certain points which need clarification, because the more they are clear to us, the better becomes our quality of meditation, or intense becomes our tapasya. Take for example, Bab Dada has been saying that there should be firm determination, dridhata, as he has been calling, a firm resolve. Whatever the circumstances, whatever the difficulties, whatever the obstacles in our way, come what may, I will be a tapasvi. I will stabilize myself in the awareness of Shiv Baba and have stability of my emotions. Will have a balanced mind and so on. But what are the factors which try to break our determination, which put obstacles in our determination? We very often make a resolve that we will practice intense meditation so many hours a day, and that the quality of our meditation or tapasya will be very high. But we may not be able to keep our goals and realize our dreams, our this noble desire. So what are the factors? Similarly, when I was for a brief time attending the class given by respected Dadiji in the retreat, she was enlightening the audience on concentration. Concentration is very essential in deep meditation, intense meditation. But what is it that disturbs concentration? How can we have a good quality of concentration? What are the factors which help us to attain a high degree of concentration? And what are the factors which distract our attention? Because meditation or tapasya is focusing our mind on the soul and the supreme soul, trying to establish the link between the two, the loveful link between the self and the supreme being. Now, as we know, the self is infinitesimal, and so is the supreme being, Shiv Baba, also infinitesimal. What do we mean by infinitesimal? That is the smallest. Nothing smaller than that can ever exist. It is the smallest entity. So how strong is required the concentration, the focus, the attention, or the awareness of the entity of the self and of the supreme being? If therefore there are some mental blockages, mental barriers, some kinds of disturbances, our concentration on the smallest, the most abstract entity would be impossible, or it would be only of a very, very short duration. Similarly, we are supposed to be reminding ourselves constantly or again and again of the qualities of Shiv Baba. Baba is the ocean of peace, ocean of bliss, almighty, and so on. What are these qualities? Qualities are even more subtler than the entity itself. It is a philosophical point that qualities are always more subtle than the thing itself. The thing may have some extension, may have some size, but the quality is still smaller. So if the soul is infinitesimal and the supreme being is also infinitesimal, then what about the qualities? When, for example, I say peace and purity are my original nature, so which, in other words, means that I am trying to remind myself of my qualities, original qualities, namely peace and purity. So purity and peace are still subtle as compared to the entity itself, that is the soul, which is infinitesimal. So how clear our mind should be, and what should be the finer quality of our concentration, so that we can have a grip over these thoughts. Thought is the subtlest, and to have a grip over the thought is one of the factors which is essential to meditation. Because in Raj Yoga, there are three factors. One is Pratyahara. Pratyahara means detachment. We have to detach. And the other is Dharana. That is, we have to keep holding to a particular thought. We have not allowed our mind to be distracted, to be wandering here and there, to be moving in various directions, to be subject to various kinds of pulls. On the other hand, we have to stabilize our mind in one thought, at least for some time. And this is called Dharana. And Dhyana, which means awareness, heightened awareness, or attention. And concentration is nothing but focused attention. It is the height of attention. So, and then we go to the stage of Samadhi, that is the stage of stabilization, realization, or absorption, as you can say, in the qualities of the Supreme. We can experience bliss, peace, love, and so on. That is the Samadhi stage, Sahaj Samadhi, the easy kind of stabilization, the easy kind of realization, the easy access to absorption in these kind of experiences. That is the experiential stage. Before we merge into that experiential stage and get stabilized into that experiential stage, these are the two requisites, two necessary elements. One is the awareness or the focus or the attention, which is what we call soul consciousness, God consciousness. You may call it consciousness or awareness or attention. And the other is detachment. Now, how can we be perfectly detached? Because detachment is the first. We sometimes try to get detached from the body. But detachment from the body is only one kind of detachment. There are other kinds of detachment. For example, we may be attached very much to our past, to certain other human beings. We may not be conscious of our own body, but we may be conscious of other persons. Take, for example, the case of a bhakta, a devotee. The devotee has so much attachment with Krishna, for example, with Rama or Krishna, or whosoever be the Lord or the deity of which he or she is the worshipper. Now then again, Krishna has a body. We are not being body conscious in the sense that we are forgetting our own body, but we are being body conscious because we are thinking of the body of Krishna. So we are replacing one kind of body consciousness by another kind of consciousness. We are getting detached from our own body. That is what the bhaktas do. They also for a while get detached from their own body. But then they get detached, they get attached to the body of whom they worship. What is, for example, a Christian prayer? When you pray to Christ, you are remembering another embodied person. So you are being body conscious in a different way. But when, on the other hand, we remember the Supreme Soul, the Jyoti Bindu, the point of light, then only we are trying to be in the incorporeal stage. That exactly is the detachment. So when we are taking this first step of detachment, let us be clear in our mind that we have not only to detach from our body, but also detach from all the embodied persons, whosoever they may be. Because the body is made up of matter, we want to be spiritual persons. But then again, we are being materialists in a different sense. That body being made up of matter, we again are trying to be attracted towards a beautiful body or the body of a holy person, great person, a god with G small or goddess. So this again is a diversion, some kind of an attachment. Similarly, we may be attached to our own past, as I was saying. It may be negative, it may be positive. Someone disturbed me, did not behave properly with me once upon a time, maybe 2 days ago or 2 years ago. If I think of that at that time, now all the persons are bodied beings. Now I am attached to my past. I may not be attached only to the entities, to the things and to the persons, but I may be attached to certain points of time in the past. So this again is some kind of an attachment. There might have been a beautiful, a good, comfortable past. I may be thinking, oh, those were the good days when I used to play, and when I was a student in a college, I was a brilliant student. People used to praise me. I have this ability, that ability, and the other ability. So I may be thinking of that thing. So this again is something which is taking me to attachment of another kind. This is not detachment. For a while I may not be remembering this present body, but my body as it was, say 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And then let me be aware that attachment always has with it the memory, the remembrance. And Baba says, yoga is the pilgrimage of remembrance. So whenever I am attached to something, it means I am remembering something. Attachment is nothing but a loveful remembrance. The only thing being that it is a negative kind. A negative kind of loveful remembrance. This is what is called attachment. And the positive kind of loveful remembrance is called yoga, is called meditation. When you remember Shiv Baba, at that point of time also there is love for Shiv Baba. And there is also remembrance of Shiv Baba. Love always reminds you of someone, else it is not love. So when there is heightened emotion of love, there is heightened remembrance. Both go together. And this is what yoga is. So if on the other hand, I am trying to remember the worldly beings, the human beings, the mortal persons, their bodies and their past, then I am doing some process which is antithesis to, actually antagonistic to meditation. I am actually doing something which is contradictory to meditation. Meditation requires me to think only of Shiv Baba. Baba says none but one. Ek nami, think only of one. And on the other hand, I am thinking of other persons except that one. So this is something which is a reverse process, which is not tapasya. So what is it? What is meant by detachment, which is the first step? So I was trying to make it clear by saying that detachment is not only separation or getting withdrawn from the body or from the awareness of the body, but besides getting withdrawn from the persons, you have to get withdrawn from the time, from the memories, from the reminiscences, from whatever is from the past, maybe your life, maybe of some other holy person, whosoever. People generally say that those people who don't believe in image worship, idol worship, they say that we should not worship the idols. This is bhakti marg. What, for example, Muhammad did? What do the Muslims say? They broke all the images which were there once upon a time in Mecca. They are called the idol breakers, not the idol makers or the idol worshippers. But if we are trying to remember various human beings, then in a sense we are being the image worshippers. Suppose there is a person who is a holy person, maybe Christ, maybe Krishna, maybe like the Hare Krishna, Hare Rama people, whosoever. If we are trying to remind, suppose we don't have any grass images or grass idols, we are not worshipping them as some bhaktas are doing. But if in our mind we are making their images and getting attached to them, then again we are doing some kind of an idol worship. It is not meditation, it is not yoga. It may be a kind of a bhakti. And we are supposed to do tapasya, which means our mind has to be focused on that point of light, which is what we call by the name Shiv Baba. Then secondly, when I was talking of determination, sometimes there may be conflict in the own mind. Not only in the mind, but the intellect and the mind may be at loggerheads. They may be fighting with each other. The mind has a particular wish, a particular desire. It wants to go in one direction. And the intellect says, no, no, it is not good. Baba says, this is not maryada. This is not what I should do. So the intellect is giving the judgment that it would be wrong for me to do this. So if the mind and the intellect are not in unison, not in harmony, they are not united, how can there be concentration? If before I sit in meditation, I have done certain things which my judgment asked me not to do and which my mind pulled me to do, then you will find that my mind is torn. It is a split mind, so to say. My concentration is not perfect because during the rest part of the time, rest part of the day, my mind and intellect are not united. They go in different directions. They exert different kinds of pull, opposite pulls on my mind. Similarly, there may be certain occasions when my mind is confused. There may be some kind of a conflict. So if there are various kinds of conflicts in the mind, or there are various sometimes confusion in my mind, or there is fear in my mind, then also the concentration cannot be perfect. Therefore, Baba has been saying very often in the Murli, children, you should become Befikr Badsha. That is a king without worry. Because being without worry, without any anxiety, is very essential to having a good quality of tapasya. And because the fear in itself is indicative of so many things. Let us remind ourselves that one negative factor is not one alone. It is altogether always in the company of so many other negativities. Take for example this fear, as I was saying. It's a negative trait. But this fear is never alone. Why there is fear? Why there is a sense of insecurity? Now this in itself shows that you don't have faith in Shiv Baba. When Baba says, I am your companion, you are under my umbrella, I will help you. And when I know that God is almighty, even if I have any weakness, but he says, if you have love for me, that makes things easy for you, because I help you. Then, even in spite of all these assurances from the highest of the high, from one who can always help me, whatever be the obstacles in my way, if still I think that the reverse may happen, the negative may happen, if still the anxiety or the fear is there, doesn't that show that I still have a doubt in my mind? That what Shiv Baba is saying, it may happen, it may not happen. He says, I will help you, but perhaps he may not help me. Either I am not fit for it, or he may forget about it, because he has so many children. In Murlis, he has been saying, I have 5 billion children. So how can he help everyone? So maybe sometimes he forgets being, after all, a point of light. How can he remember the 5 billion people all at the same time? Or it may take some time and in the meantime I lose the battle with my circumstances. So this kind of a doubt has other negative traits with it. So if they say that there are two enemies a human being has in this world. One is Mr. Doubt, the other is misunderstanding. One is a miss, the other is a mister, you see. You will find that these two are actually the cause of most of our problems. So, again this Mr. Doubt comes into our mind and shakes our stability, our stage of stability. Baba says that you should have stability, achal and adol, a firmness of your state, immovable state, and then Mr. Doubt comes and begins to shake our throne, and then we feel scared. Again we have anxiety or worry. So we have to understand why all these things come and what kind of conflicts there are in our mind and how to resolve them. Without knowing how to resolve those conflicts, our determination cannot be very firm. We cannot be having the firm resolve. And if we are not having the firm resolve or the firm determination, which is the first, which Baba says, before you begin to practice meditation, or in fact before you begin to do anything in this world, the first thing is a strong will. They say, where there is will, there is way. I will certainly do it, come what may. That is the basic requirement. That is from where we should start, as a matter of fact. If we have a weak will, a very shifty kind of, shaky kind of determination, then we cannot reach our goal. But how can we have firm determination if Baba says we have, there are so many factors which Baba has been mentioning. For example, one of them is that what we call albelapan, that is carelessness. I may today make a firm resolve that during this tapasya year, I will do tapasya. I will practice so many hours of meditation, high quality meditation. But then, if mentally I am slack, there is mental sluggishness, mental carelessness, because I was saying that attention and focus or heightened awareness is very essential to meditation. And this mental slackness, mental sleepiness, you can say, carelessness, mental laziness, this is the opposite of attention. Because when a person is attentive, it is alert, it is awakened. Therefore, this is called spiritual awakening. Like when they talk of defense preparedness, when the country is perhaps thinking that it is going to be at war with a neighbor country, they give the red alert. Their forces are totally on the alert. Anything may happen any moment. So you must have your gun with you. Don't say that gun is lying in my room. But you must be prepared to fight. That is fighting preparedness sort of thing. So that is what alertness is. And when I am practicing meditation, my target is infinitesimal. The point where I am supposed to meditate, it requires the heightened alacrity, awakening, state of awakening. A little bit of laziness, a little bit of carelessness would reduce the quality of my tapasya. My mind has to be on the perfect alertness as much as it can be. Not a little bit of sleep, not a little bit of fatigue, not a little bit of, you can say, that careless attitude is required, because otherwise I cannot have that good quality tapasya. So therefore, even if I determine that I would practice tapasya this year, but my sanskara, my nature is that after making resolves, I sleep over things. I am careless about them. And I am not alert, not awakened. Then I am practicing something which is the antithesis of meditation. Because meditation requires me alert and attentive. Dhyana, as I was saying. Dhyana is, your concentration should not be disturbed. Your mind should be focused. Not on this side, not on that side. It should be completely in line with your object, with your target. Like when a person begins to fire the gun, then if the gun shakes, he cannot shoot the target. Similarly, my mind has to be alert of this order. Alertness has to be of this standard. And if there is little bit of carelessness, Baba says, albelapan, this carelessness is my worst enemy. It is the worst enemy of a tapasvi. If I say, carelessness, and then this carelessness leads me to laziness. And that laziness, why carelessness first of all leads to non-seriousness as a matter of fact. Carelessness and non-seriousness are the two sides of the same coin, you can say. So if I am non-serious about things, that this is tapasya year, I say, oh yes, yes. All years are tapasya year, not necessarily this. So that means I am being non-serious. Baba says, I will give you so many blessings, so many vardhan this year if you practice meditation. I say, but after all, meditation is the goal, is one of the important subjects. Why only this year? But I am taking it in a different light, in a different spirit. So I am being non-serious. Now this non-seriousness will lead me to carelessness. And that carelessness will lead me to laziness. And that laziness will lower my alertness. And that lack of alertness will reduce my attention, dhyana, as I was saying, my concentration. That will not be of highest pitch. And when that concentration is not of that high order, how can I have good tapasya? That karmatit stage, or that bindu stage, the seed stage. How can be I in that incorporeal state, where not a touch of body consciousness has to be there? It has to be totally eliminated. And all other attractions have also to be repulsed. And I alone am to be with Shiv Baba, in his company alone. So that kind of effort is the highest effort. I think there cannot be any other effort which requires more alertness than this requires. This therefore makes our personality so high. Why we get the highest reward? Why we go to paradise? Why we are given so many benefits by practicing meditation? One of the factors is that we practice this kind of alertness, this kind of awakening, this kind of the subtlest of efforts, which is very, very powerful. Our mind becomes such potent, such powerful an instrument. We can do anything in this world. Because, number one, I am making a strong will. And once the will is strong, if you read the history of mankind, you find that only those were victorious, those were able to attain some high result, some good success, whose will was strong. They moved the masses of mankind, they moved the mountains from one place to the other. They were able to reach very high goals, who had the resoluteness of mind, the firmness of mind, the great determination was what led them to success, or from success to higher success. So I am making a firm determination, I will not move from my goal. I am certainly going to attain a particular stage of tapasya, whatever the circumstances. It may be cold winter, it may be hot summer, I may sleep in the night late hours, I may be required to do so many things. Whatever the thing, I will certainly do this. So that is your first victory, your first success. Because you are making your mind alert. Non-seriousness, carelessness is the first you kill them. So these are the obstacles in our way. As big as the Himalayas, this non-seriousness and lack of alertness and lack of effort, because they distract our mind from this. And then I said conflicts. Why there are conflicts? Why? Conflicts of various kinds. Take for example, Baba says our behavior should be of a particular quality. We are children of God. God is blissful, peaceful, compassionate, kind, loving, and he has all those qualities. So as his children, we are supposed to have these qualities in our behavior towards others, in our interaction with others. Now if I find that there are many people who have been in this jnana for many years, but I find they have anger, they are short-tempered, they have jealousy, and they have narrow-mindedness, so many other things. So here is a kind of a doubt in my mind. If it is so, if they over a period of achieve this goal, it is not for me perhaps, I am not made for this. So let me better go and enjoy life, as if this is not enjoyment of life. And whatever happens with the rest of the mankind will happen with me. I don't bother about it. Eat, drink and be merry. So this kind of a thought comes in my mind. When I find that there are people who are very shaky and I am better than them, whatever may be the reasons. So the other thing is, no. The other thought, because there is a conflict. The conflict is always between two or more than two. And the other thought is, no, if this person has not been able to achieve this, then there are some other people who have achieved this, or they have improved upon their previous stage. They are not having at least some kinds of negativities. So why should I look upon this person? Baba says that you should not be mindful of whatever is the negative in other people. Just try to look on what positive points they have. So I am perhaps being negative in the sense that I am noticing only what is bad in them, perhaps not taking notice of what is good in them. So this thought then again strikes or does a wrestling match or a boxing match with the previous thought, and this conflict goes on. And if this conflict goes on, it comes on my face, appears into my eyes, I get headache, I feel tired. You know, in the beginning, when you read the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna makes a mention to God of a state of mind. He says, I will not fight. This is from where the whole Bhagavad Gita starts. He says, I will not fight. Why you will not fight? He says so many good things. It appears as if whatever he is saying is correct. He seems to be very reasonable, very logical, very philosophical, though actually it is the reverse of it. So sometimes it so seems to us that whatever we are saying or thinking is very reasonable, very rational, though actually it is the opposite of it. And when he is mentioning this, he says that my throat is dried. I don't have this wet with my saliva. And he says that my cheeks are tense. My hands cannot lift the bow and the arrows. And so on. He mentions his state of mind and says, I cannot fight. I will not fight. So happens with us when we have these kinds of conflict. This is one conflict which I told you. The other may be of circumstances. A person is working in some government office. There are people, the bureaucrats, who take bribes. They are corrupt people. They accept a lot of money for doing people's work, for which the government also pays them. Now he is surrounded on all the sides by these kinds of people who have actually lost all sense of shame. They have no conscience, no sympathy for human beings, no brotherly relationships, no spirituality, nothing. And this person who is a BK, he works among them. He is only one among all these wolves. And he feels scared how to live among them. Because all the time their thoughts are different, my thoughts are different. So he thinks either to resign the job and find another one. But how to do, it's not easy during these days of unemployment. And the other is that if I give up going to the class, then only my conflict will end. Because there is a conflict. On the one hand, he wants to be an honest person, a person with a clean conscience, a person with pure thoughts. He does not want to be involved in bad things. And on the other hand, the atmosphere is so polluting that he thinks it is impossible for him to be unaffected by this, because all the time there is this kind of thought. People come and offer him bribes. It is money. He feels tempted. He says, should I take it? Why not? I use it for godly service. Maybe I open a center, I give message to other people in the world. So many things come in his life. There are many kinds of conflicts. So unless and until, when you listen to the people, there are many kinds of conflicts. I think if we just begin to write down those conflicts and put them into a volume, it will become bigger than the Encyclopedia Britannica. So many conflicts there are. But why should there be conflicts? Baba has given us so clear knowledge that in fact there is no scope for these kinds of conflicts. Where from these conflicts come? Because again, we are I mean losing our determination, our strong will, our clarity of mind, or forgetting one or the other point of knowledge. Honesty means honesty. Honesty cannot be divided into bits and parts. Honesty is something which is crystal clear. It cannot be polluted. You cannot say that it can have a touch of dishonesty. Either it is whole, if Mama used to say, if a person smokes on one day a week or one day a month, you won't say he is a non-smoker because he smokes, even if he smokes one day a week. Similarly, an honest person is an honest person. That's all. And if you indulge in dishonesty once a while or one day a year or 1 hour a month, then honesty is finished. It is dishonesty. We have to be very clear in our mind. If whether we want to be, which grade of yogi we want to be. A full-fledged tapasvi, as Baba was saying, full caste or half caste. What kind of yogi we want to become. It is for us to understand. Otherwise, Brahman life is what purity is. Brahman life without purity is no Brahman life. Purity is the first and foremost. Baba says, purity is royalty, purity is personality. This purity is the first and most important foundation of our life. Now it is for you to decide what you want to do. Certain people, some people would come to Baba and say, Baba, I have some such circumstances, I require, someone to cook my food, to look after me, this and that. Baba, can I marry? Should I do marriage? Now what should Baba say? Now the whole knowledge makes it clear what you have to do, what you have not to do. But still this person goes to Baba and asks this question, silly question, as if this has not been made clear. Still there is some clarity required on this kind of a thing. Now it is for you to decide. So naturally if someone asks you also whether he should marry, the very question gives the answer what he wants to do, you see. Because this mind is having a kind of a conflict. He wants to do this thing, but he also knows the knowledge. If he did not know what the knowledge says, why should he come and ask you? Any other person who is not a BK and who is not listening to this Baba's knowledge will never ask you this question. This question will be asked only by such person who knows that Baba is asking us to practice celibacy. Then only this question will arise. Without that, this question does not arise at all. Whether you marry or you don't marry, it is for you to decide. But the only thing is that if you want to be a yogi, you must observe celibacy and become pure. Now what you are to do, it is for you to decide. So what I was saying was that if we have a split mind, if there is a conflict in our mind, or if there is confusion, how can there be concentration? Perfect concentration can be there only when mind has complete faith. Similarly, what I was saying was that detachment, that is pratyahar, and dharana, that is holding your mind on to a particular thought for some time, and dhyana, that is attention, these are the essential factors of meditation or concentration, as you may say. But then besides this, Baba has said surrender, self-surrender, surrender to God, and dedication and devotion. Without dedication and devotion, there cannot be complete detachment. If you are dedicated to Shiv Baba, to none but one, then you cannot have even the slightest attachment to other persons, or even the slightest attraction for other things. So what makes us lose our concentration is either lack of our surrender, lack of dedication, and as I said, confusion or conflict or some kind of a struggle between the mind and the intellect. The knowledge is not clear, so that our judgment is weak. It is not able to control our mind. These are some of the factors which give us, less concentration and therefore less, lower quality of tapasya. Besides that, as I was saying, the values, Baba has been saying, you must always consider yourself to be sitting on a lotus. Because Purity is the first and foremost. If we are not practicing purity in our practical life, in our day-to-day life, there cannot be high quality tapasya or the high standard of meditation as we would like to be. Besides that, I find that Baba has been very often mentioning the desires, that there are many desires. One, for example, is the desire for name and fame, he has been mentioning. The desire for worldly comforts. During these days also he has been mentioning that we require so many kinds of dresses, so many kinds of comforts. So these desires, again, are a kind of a distraction. They also put obstacles in our way of practicing meditation or tapasya. So if we reduce our desires and have only one noble desire, that I want to be a great tapasvi, a yogi raj, or holy hans, as Baba has been saying, the holy swan. Baba has been giving us some symbols, some images, which signify so much. In one symbol gives us so many thoughts. If I just think that I am a holy hans, a holy swan, sitting on a lotus, and that I have no other desires, but the desire to be a great yogi, because by attaining Shiv Baba, by attaining my link with him, by having my firm love with him, or by attaining my stability in meditation, I will attain all, because this is in which everything is included. So if this is very clear to me, then I think is the way whereby I can have deep meditation and tapasya. So this is briefly what I would like to say about tapasya, and after that I would like to welcome any questions you have about tapasya or meditation or these factors. If anyone of you would like to ask something. Yes, brother. Just mention as you were saying. Would you repeat it, please? Actually, it is loveful concentration. Because there cannot be perfect concentration without love. Our concentration is for over an object which is our goal or which is our love. So if we want to have concentration, then first of all we decide. Our mind is made up. We have, decided that we want to become yogi. And we know its benefits. Then only there can be concentration. Without that, there cannot be any concentration. Now the question is, what are the yuktis to overcome mental laziness and carelessness? Now, I think carelessness is there because we don't realize what will be the benefits of this effort. If we understand what we will be gaining by making this effort, how enormous will be the reward? What will be the attainment or the achievement, the highest, the greatest that can ever be? Then I think there will not be carelessness or laziness. Baba used to give various examples. Take for example, when you travel in trains in India, you are passing through Ajmer or any other railway station at 0 hour or past midnight, when everyone is supposed to be sleeping, and a tea vendor comes to your window in the train, in your compartment, garam garam chai, garam garam chai. He says, would you like to have hot tea? Now why at this 0 hour is he trying to wake up and ask you to have a cup of hot tea? Why he is not sleeping when he is supposed to enjoy sound sleep? Or soundless sleep, you can say. Then the reason is that this person thinks that this is the time to make money, to do his business, to sell the tea, because that is the source of earning. So if you think that by practicing meditation, you will be getting rid of all your past karmic account, and you will be getting in the golden age and silver age, what does not lack in anything, which is the, in fact, all the attainments which are possible on this planet Earth, you will be having. And there will be nothing negative, like ill health, like suffering, like sorrow, death, or other things which are the cause of pain or peacelessness. those negative things would be absent and all the positive things you will be attaining. And just then again, when you are aware of the shortage of time, then again you are at the maximum alert. When you find that the task to be done is very great and the time left for fulfilling it is very small, then you make very sincere efforts, you increase your speed and you do it rapidly. Then you have no chance of thinking to be lazy or to be careless, because you think you have to finish it. So one is that you must attach the proper importance and give it the proper priority. The importance and priority is determined by the factor that you understand how much gain you will be having by doing it and how much loss you will be incurring by not doing it. And then when secondly you understand how less time is left, and we have to get rid of the past karmic account of 63 lives, which is an enormous work. And the time given to us is very little, because we are not sure how long we are going to live. Leave aside the point when the destruction will take place. So within this short time we are to do that. Then I have so many negative sanskaras which I have to transform. It's not an easy task. To understand knowledge doesn't take much time. To understand the method of yoga also doesn't take much time. But to change all the negative sanskaras and to have in their place the positive qualities, all the positive qualities, and that also 16 degrees, requires a lot of effort. So if I keep that in mind, then there is no reason why there should be carelessness or mental laziness or non-seriousness. Then I begin to practice it sincerely. Question is, very often when I meditate, I focus my eyes on Brahma Baba instead of a point. Is this not idol worship? There are two things which my meditation asks me to do. One is that I have to focus on Shiv Baba, because he is the supreme being with whom I am supposed to forge my link. Secondly, there is an embodiment of the divine qualities. When I say Shiv Baba is peaceful, blissful, loveful, how do I know that this point of light has these qualities? Because when it embodied or incarnated into the body of Brahma, then only it had manifested all these qualities. So I do not consider Brahma, I do not focus my mind on the body of Brahma, but instead I consider it to be the vehicle of Shiv Baba. Not am I reminding myself of Brahma as a human soul. Brahma Baba, when people used to meet Brahma Baba, someone would like to embrace Brahma Baba. Baba would say, if you are just trying to embrace this human person, then don't come near to me. Because then you are again trying to love human beings rather than Shiv Baba. So my love, my devotion, my dedication, my spirit of surrender, my concentration is on Shiv Baba, thinking that Shiv Baba comes into this body. Now what happens is, there is a saying that there is no picture without a background. Can you imagine something without any background? Just think of Dadiji, for example. Either you think of Dadiji on the stage when she gives the murli, or you think of Dadiji in her room, or you think of Dadiji in the compound in Pandabhavan. The background must be there. Without background, there is no picture of a person. Now, either you think of Shiv Baba in Paramdham, because there it is where he is, or you think of Shiv Baba in Brahma. You have to have the background besides the person itself, because of the very nature of our mind, very nature of our thinking. So at that time, we don't have any attachment with the body of Brahma, or any relationship with the body of Brahma, nor are we worshipping him, because our dedication and surrender is to Shiv Baba. Because Brahma Baba also did it to him. And this is what his teachings are for us. We are following it. The question is about non-seriousness. We are being serious about seriousness, okay? Now the question is, what is the balance between seriousness and lightness? The other question is, to what extent do we please others? One may have yoga with people in trying to please them. Now, in regard to the first question, when I say that we have to have seriousness, I don't mean to say that we should have serious nature. To have serious nature, to be without a laughter, without humor, without sweetness, without a smile, is a different thing. I am not talking of that kind of seriousness. And I am talking only of being alert and awakened to a particular job, to have a sense of responsibility, you can say. To understand the enormity of the task before us. To have that kind of a frame of mind in which you very much know what you are supposed to do. In other words, sense of responsibility. But then again, I won't be able to do my thing efficiently and well, unless or until I am light at the same time. If seriousness gives me some kind of a heaviness, it makes me serious in the sense that I am not relaxed, then again this will be something opposite to meditation. Meditation is what leads you to relaxation. And this Sahaja Yoga, Easy Yoga is practiced when our mind is relaxed, when we, detach our mind from all these problems. So when I say that I should have seriousness, it is just a sense of responsibility. How much task is to be done? How much of value, of benefit, of advantage this yoga is to me? This kind of a realization. What I will be gaining by practicing meditation. Beyond that, I have to be light. Except that I should have this kind of a realization, this kind of a feeling, this kind of a sense of responsibility, I have to be light. What do I mean by light? Sometimes it so happens that I have determined that I will practice 4 hours of meditation every day. Okay. Now I have also the seriousness. It means I understand that I have to do it for my own benefit. But then, today my mind says, and not sitting cross-legged, just in a formal way in meditation for so much of time. So, I am serious about practicing meditation, but sometimes I have to take it in a lighter way. If I try to have boxing with my mind every time, if I try to curb my mind in all the cases, then again it may become rebellious. It may come out against me. Again there may be some kind of a conflict. Sometimes we have to do hibernation in order to protect ourselves. Resilience is okay. We have to have sometimes a fighting spirit. And sometimes we have to let things be. Take it easy. Otherwise, it becomes difficult. What I mean is, I say, alright, I don't sit cross-legged, let me be sitting in a sofa in an easy way with my legs stretched and I can just think of Baba in a lighter vein or I can just have some cassettes and I can listen to Baba's songs. This again is a meditation, way of meditation. So what I have to do is that I will be doing meditation but not being serious that I have to do it in a particular way, in a very regimented manner, in a sort of a strict disciplinarian way. I mean, discipline has to be there because yoga is a discipline. But not in that strict sense that I have to push my mind down, pin it down somehow or the other. Like you throttle some person like a wrestler and go sit on his body. Not that sort of thing. But just, Baba says, tapasya is like dancing, like enjoying. In many Murlis, he has been saying it is just a kind of a celebration. Do it joyfully. So this kind of a spirit has also to be there besides seriousness. Then the second question was, to what extent do we please others? One may have yoga with people in trying to please them. I actually do not know how this question arises from the talk I gave or how it is related with tapasya. But all the same, since this question has been put, actually we have always to know the background with which it is put, but still, whatever I can understand from this question is, that sometimes we are perhaps bent upon pleasing others by whatever means. This has perhaps become our goal, because to please everyone. And Baba also says that others should be satisfied with you, you should be satisfied with yourself. Shiv Baba should also be satisfied with you. So maybe that it is with that intent that the question has been put. How far we should be trying all the time to please others. I think our aim always is not that we should have the awareness of pleasing others. Our aim is that we have to follow Baba's maryadas, some kind of a yogic way of life, style of life, and try to be having those values in our life. Then we are sure that every person will be pleased. But sometimes you have to make special efforts to please others, because in pleasing them lies the service. Now, it does not mean that we have to surrender our principles, our values, give up what norms of conduct Baba has given us. Pleasing does not mean going out of the way, giving up all our practices, spiritual practices, to outright try to please somebody in that sense, not that way. But suppose someone is angry with us and I feel that actually he has misunderstood, he still does not understand it properly, I have nothing against him, I am very much convinced that I have not done any wrong to him, not harmed him, but he does not understand, whatever it may be. So, instead of arguing with him, why you get angry with me, why you are displeased with me, why you feel offended with me, I have done nothing wrong to you. Well, if you don't like to speak to me, it is your choice, I care a fig for you. Not this kind of approach. If I just at that time, to soothe the feelings of that person, I say, I am sorry if you have felt it. I would not do it again. Okay. So that man gets his balance restored. He calms down. And then maybe that he would realize, if not today, then tomorrow, that I was right. That I did not have any bad intention. I didn't do anything wrong. Or when he is in a proper mood, then I could explain that thing to him, if it ever happens. If I get that opportunity, to wait for some other time. Not to just, they say, you may win an argument but lose a friend. Not to do that sort of thing. So when I say that I should please others, it does not mean that I should do, wrong things to please others. But if just my sweet words, my gesture of love, my sympathy for someone, expression of sympathy for someone, or any other kind of an effort without the breach of my maryadas, Baba's maryadas, I can make someone happy. That is what I mean by pleasing others. Not breaking the norms of life. Or need. Desire, oblique need. Desire and need are actually two different things, but so it may be desire or it may be need. So this is how the question is put. How to deal with the desire or need of recognition? This is one question. The second is, how can one help a soul whose behavior seems to be based on this desire of recognition? Now, whether one should have a desire of recognition or one should not have a desire of recognition. Now, I think that when we do something, it is human nature that you think that someone should appreciate you. Because when someone appreciates what you have done, or if you have an ability and you have used that ability for a good cause, for the service of others, you feel that you don't want any grass reward, but at least a nice word should come from the people saying that, oh, you have been very nice to us, you looked after us very well. While we were here, you have been looking after us, so on and so forth. Or when a person does some other kind of a service with feeling of fatigue or something, you say that you have done tireless service, we found that you did not sleep properly, you cared for others rather than for yourself. So, the human nature, or you can say the human weakness. Why I say weakness? Why I say nature? They are two different things. But sometimes they become the same thing, because when weakness becomes your nature, not that the nature is separate and the weakness is not there. Now, why I say weakness? Because if I become dependent upon it, then I always expect people to admire me, to praise me, in so many words, and this habit increases. It's not that I just get satisfied. On the other hand, if I feel that this person did very little, and he has been praised so much, and I did so much and have been praised very little, so then I become dependent upon others to praise me, which means I don't consider that service has its own value, that service is something good which I should do, or that ability which I use for the service of the society is actually best utilization of that ability. Otherwise, if I don't use my ability for the service of others, that will atrophy, that will die down, it will finish. My using of my ability is a positive gain to me, whether someone praises me or does not. It is because when I use that ability, I get satisfaction that I used it. And when I feel that the other has benefited, this again is a satisfaction that I have been able to do some good to others. Is this less than the praise which I am getting in so many words? Then I realize that if I had not used my ability, it would have died down, because any ability which you do not use, gradually it becomes weak, and after some time it withers away, it dies. So it was my own benefit that I used it, so on and so forth. There could be so many other factors which could be mentioned. But I become dependent upon others to praise me, and to use the choicest words from dictionary, because you find that there are two kinds of people. One are the people who want praise. Others are the people who have the habit of praising. They praise in the superlative adjectives. He is the best man, the noblest man, my dearest friend, using always the superlatives. They are the people who are making you dependent, giving you a bad habit. Beware of them. I think you should feel some kind of an aversion to people who always praise you in superlatives. Only God is the person who can be praised in superlatives, because He is the perfect. And if someone begins to use for me the superlatives, I think either there is an interest which he wants to be served through me, maybe that he wants something from me, you see. I have to do some good to him, some obligation to him. Perhaps that is why he is praising me in superlatives. Or he has the habit, you see. So I should not be dependent upon this, otherwise I am spoiling my own self. I am gradually losing my peace and becoming slave to praise. Like a person who is slave to alcohol, which gives him intoxication. Now praise instead gives me intoxication instead of alcohol. I tell people I no longer take alcohol. Originally I used to take. Why? Because originally I required intoxication, but now I don't. But I forget that now I am using another kind of alcohol, namely praise. This is also what intoxicates me. Otherwise, unless it tickles me, why should I try to have one peg upon another of praise? People are praising me, you see. That kind of thing. So I think that we should not be after recognition. But if recognition comes, in the sense that if people appreciate what we did, we should not, in the sense that it should not go very much into our head, that we do not become proud of ourselves. Let us beware. This again is something like a medicine which may do good to you, but it may have some after effect, you know. Similarly, this kind of a praise is removing your fatigue. You worked and worked and worked day and night very hard, and these persons, Dadiji and others, are praising you. Oh, this person has been doing a lot of service. Now this is removing my fatigue. Like an analgesic may remove your pain, but may attack your heart after some time. So what happens is that this praise is giving me some kind of a benefit, but leaving an after effect, in the sense that I feel depressed because for so many days nobody has praised me. You see. So I feel something which is very nutritious, some kind of a tonic missing from my food. You know. That sort of thing. Some pill is required again. So someone is required always. Then I feel that the sisters who used to give me a lot of love has ceased to give me love. Either they are exhausted of love or they are not, paying any attention to me. So therefore it is harmful. But when I say that it is human nature, what I mean is nature in the good sense. Because if someone praises you or someone recognizes something good in you or some good task you did, then it is a kind of a understanding that people liked it. What I did was okay, fine, you know. Because this kind of a thing you may require in to know whether what you did was all right or not. But not in the sense that when you have given a speech and when you come off the stage and you ask people, did you like it? Not that kind of a thing again. But if people say, shake hands, I liked your speech. There are many people who would come to you after that and say, I liked your speech very much. Because they think it is good for the audience to encourage the speaker. At least he should know that he has spent some time with us and that we listened to him and that it was nice. So, if they say like this, you may feel satisfied what you did, your performance was okay. But don't take it into your head. Because if they don't do, then next time you will also feel depressed. You know. So this kind of a thing should not become a part of our habit. Okay. Then how can one help a soul whose behavior seems to be based on this desire? Now it does not mean that you should help him by praising him. Because you are giving a bad habit. You are spoiling the child. People used to say, spare the rod and spoil the child. You know. That was the old saying. But I think if you just praise the child so much, then again you are spoiling the child. A word of encouragement is okay. Just try to inspire people. Create enthusiasm in them. That is okay. But this is what Baba also used to do. If you find that someone has a talent, someone has ability, you just give enthusiasm to the person so that ability may be used for the greater good of the society. So that kind of a thing you must do. Because that is the liver with which you can change the person. Like you require a liver to move something. Similarly, to bring transformation in human beings, you have to use a word of encouragement. But using a word of encouragement is not necessarily always the same thing as praising in superlatives. Exaggeration, you know. You should also keep your mind balanced. Neither be so miser in using words of praise. If someone has a good quality, at least you must speak some nice words and say it was good. Because if you don't do that, then you are being a miser of a different kind. You are not spending your words where we should. But if on the other hand you use very strong words, then you are giving some wrong habit to that person. Now the question is, how can I help others to build up this firm determination? As I said, if we want people to have firm resolve, then there are various kinds of people as a matter of fact, and they require various kinds of help. One is that they first of all must understand the benefit they will be having. Then only their determination will be strong. The second is that they have some weaknesses. And unless and until at such moments when their weakness is going to manifest, if I don't help them at such moments, then they will lose their determination. Suppose there are some people who determined that they would do tapasya this year, but then they are late risers, they sleep late in the night, and they get up late in the morning. Now that is their weakness, which is antagonistic to what they have determined. So what I can do is give them company for some time. I will come to pick you up at that time. Be ready by that time. This kind of thing. Or I just call them on the telephone. Are you coming? So on and so forth. We can help different people in different ways depending upon their weaknesses. which go against their determination. That sort of thing. Each stage, for a period of time, do we still need to experience all relationship with Him? That is very, very essential. Because the powers also are various kinds. You get various kinds of powers from various relationships also. And the second thing is that our remembrance and our love depends upon the kind of relationship. The love between mother and child, the love between husband and wife, the love between friend and friend, the love between brother and sister, or the love of any other relationship. Actually, what the purpose is that we should transform our love, sublimate it, and make it of a higher quality, spiritualize our love. Since we have various kinds of relationship in which our love manifests, therefore, if we have all these kinds of relationship with Shiv Baba, then only all kinds of love will become sublime. It will become transformed. It will become divine or spiritualized. So various kinds of relationship are necessary. What is the balance between seed stage and avyakt stage? I think the question perhaps is actually what is the difference between seed stage and avyakt stage, rather than the balance between the seed stage and the avyakt stage. Now, when I think that I am in angelic stage, I still am aware of body, but in a subtle form, not in the grass form. Then, and when I don't have attachment with the worldly things, no worldly attractions exert any pull on my mind, that is the avyakt stage, the angelic stage. This can be possible also when I am doing my work, when I am doing karma. So I can work by maintaining silence, and though I am aware of my surroundings and the work which I am doing and the people who are there and so on, but I am as a witness, a sakshi, I am not very much involved or absorbed in that kind of atmosphere. So that is the avyakt stage. This is possible when I am soul conscious, when I am having purity of mind, but still I am not totally detached, 100% detached from the body, because I am working through this body. Body is being used. But the seed stage is when I am completely stabilized in the soul consciousness and of the Bindu stage, the Shiv Baba, or that seed stage, Shiv Baba, who is the seed of the world tree. When I am in the incorporeal stage, when I don't even think that I have a subtle body, the angelic body, the self-luminous body. And that in fact is the Karmatith stage also. That at that time I am completely stabilized in the consciousness of the self. How to remove the influence of Laukik job preoccupations? For example, a doctor has to think about his patients, even at home, studies new plans, new medicine. Now, Baba says that if we give to it the orientation of service rather than job, if we think that our job is our service to the human souls, and that through this kind of service we have to bring them closer to Shiv Baba also, then our attitude towards our job changes. Secondly, if we are not only conscious of the physical ailment, but at the same time we are aware that they are the souls in the unhealthy bodies, because this is the end of Iron Age, because of their karmic accounts. If I at that same time remember that all this happens because of the karmic account, and that this is the Sangam Yuga, that these are the souls whom I will be treating, these are all children of Baba, though my Laukik job is of a physician, but our real relationship is of a brother to a brother, because we are souls. If this thing does not totally become oblivious, I do not forget all this, but on the other hand, this is also in my mind, then I think that I am practicing yoga in a milder form, in a dilute form, in one form at least. How can one experience love for and bliss with a supreme entity, which in tapasya is reduced in our minds to an abstract point of light. I read it again. How can one experience love for and bliss with a supreme entity, which in tapasya is reduced in our minds to an abstract point of light? Now, it is not that all the time I am aware of that point of light in a very conscious way. Even if I am remembering his qualities, that God is blissful. But still, if his form is not in my focus, his qualities are in my focus, then in one way or the other, at the subliminal level, my mind is aware that God is a point of light. So, even when I am remembering the qualities, I am indirectly remembering the form. And when I am remembering the form, my mind is focused on the form. It is there because I know that I will get these qualities from him. He is the person from whom I get these qualities. So, the thing and the quality are inseparable. When you are conscious of a thing, you may be in one way or the other conscious of the qualities. And when you are conscious of the qualities, you are conscious of the person. When we are radiating, some kind of bad feelings come from the heart. When we are meditating, some kind of bad feelings come from the heart. And we don't know how. For example, jealous, angry, etc. What can we do with this feeling and with the soul whom we have clash in the meditation? Now, actually, as I said, that concentration has not only to be in the practice of meditation, but also during other parts of the day. And for that, we have to eliminate from our awareness because there are two things which lead you to concentration. One is love, the other is hate. Hate also gives you concentration. Love also gives you concentration. If there is a person whom you hate, he comes to your mind again and again. And if your hate for him is more than your love for Shiv Baba, he will come more often to your mind rather than Shiv Baba. So this is the reverse of meditation. You are meditating upon the person whom you hate, rather than on Shiv Baba whom you love. So it is the reverse. Meditation wants you to remember Shiv Baba and his qualities. On the other hand, you are remembering somebody who is the opposite of Shiv Baba, because that is why you are hating him. And you are remembering his negative qualities. Instead of saying that Shiv Baba is peaceful, blissful, loveful, you are thinking this person is a hypocrite, he is unsympathetic, he is a devil, so on and so forth. That is what, when you begin to hate, these are some of the affirmations which come to your mind. He is a bad man. He always behaves very badly. He has no etiquette, no manners. He has no human sense. He is insensitive, very cruel, unjust. So you are remembering the qualities, but the negative qualities. In meditation, you are remembering Shiv Baba is peaceful, blissful, loveful, so on. But now you are meditating upon this person, remembering his negative qualities. So this comes to your mind because you don't know what you are doing is opposite to your aim, opposite to your goal, opposite to what you are supposed to do. So this can be stopped because a thought only can stop a thought. Thought cannot be stopped by throttling a person. Thought can be stopped by throttling the thought, and the thought can be throttled only by another kind of thought. So if you want to stop the thought at its source, the way is hate can be removed by love. Therefore, Baba said, when you begin to practice meditation, you must have goodwill and good wish for everybody. Everyone, let everyone have peace and everyone have joy. I would like to close by saying that one who has thoughts of hatred, jealousy and so on, should explain to himself, should remind himself, that he is following a process which is the reverse of meditation. When he practices meditation, he says, my original nature is purity and peace. And by remembering the qualities of Shiv Baba, he himself gets those qualities. That is how he changes his sanskaras. If now he thinks the negative, he himself would be getting the negative qualities. So, for his own sake, he should give it up. Unless and until one understands this, one will not be free from negative.
Om Shanti, thank you so much.